Welcome, nature lovers and planet protectors. This is going to be another inspiring episode of Wild Connection. Today, we're talking about a topic that concerns us all, the ever-growing menace of plastic pollution. But listen, this is not going to be just another podcast episode about the problem, because we're here to talk to someone who is paving the way for solutions and highlighting how plastic recycling in one Ugandan community is linked to the transformative concept of a circular economy. That's right, we are headed back to Uganda. Now, picture this. Our world is drowning in plastic waste, from the vast oceans to the remotest corners of the earth, including windy, impenetrable forest, where I work studying mountain gorillas. It's a challenge that demands our immediate attention and collective action. But oftentimes, we don't know what to do. In this episode, I talk with entrepreneur and co-founder of Takataka Plastics, Peter Okwoko. Takataka means waste in Swahili, and Takataka Plastics is a company that is at the forefront of taking layers of plastic and creating usable products. He's inspiring his community and others, including me, to explore the incredible possibilities in the realm of plastic recycling. From innovative technologies to grassroots initiatives, Takataka Plastics is working tirelessly to turn the tide on plastic waste in Uganda. And that's not all. Get ready to explore the concept of circular economy. What is it? It's a game-changing approach that challenges the linear take-make-dispose model. Join Peter and I as we discuss how a circular economy can redefine our relationship with plastic, making it a valuable resource rather than a despicable and disposable menace. So buckle up for an episode packed with insights, an inspiring story, and finishes with some practical tips on how each of us can play a crucial role in combating plastic pollution. Check out the show notes for some cool links, including a link to Takataka Plastics. Now, before we get started, I have a humble request. We are working hard on growing the podcast audience, and you can help us. If you wouldn't mind taking a moment to leave a review, give us a like, and share it with your friends, it would really mean a lot. And it would help continue to bring some of the exciting guests that I've been able to have on the show. Okay, it's time to turn a page and create a world where our planet thrives, one recycled plastic bottle at a time. Welcome to Wild Connection, the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. I'm a scientist and author that studies animal behavior. I'm passionate about animals and exploring the complexity of their lives, their intelligence, relationships, families, social connections, and emotions. I also love helping people reconnect with nature to live better lives. This podcast is about you, other animals, and how we're all connected in this wild and crazy thing called life. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Wild Connection, the podcast. Today is a really special interview with the co-founder, co-COO, and COO of Takataka Plastics, located in Gulu. Peter, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for hosting me on your podcast.
I'm really excited because, as you know, I also have a passion for plastics, or I should say a passion for eliminating plastics. And I want to talk about the company that you founded and the impact that you're having. But first, I'd really love for our listeners to get a little bit of a sense of who you are, what your background is, and how you came to be doing this work. So would you mind sharing a little bit about where you're from?
Yeah, so I'm Peter Okwoko, and I'm originally from Pade District, which is it's about 2 hours drive from Gulu City. But I I was born and I grew up in eastern Uganda in a district called Iganga. And my background is actually in computing. I studied IT from Gulu University, and I briefly taught IT as well at the same university. Then I also studied a postgraduate diploma in project planning and management, and then did my master's in innovative communication technologies and entrepreneurship from Aalborg University in Copenhagen. And that's where the story of diving into plastic recycling starts from. I mean, when I was in Denmark, I was super fascinated by how Copenhagen is clean, and comparing that to the state of plastic waste management back at home in Uganda, I had that feeling of trying to do something around that particular area. And I remember during the summer break of 2016, I returned back home briefly, and I was like, yeah, we need to do something around plastic recycling. And I started up this company called Afri Green Sustain. And our main focus was on sensitization, like reaching out to schools. I mean, by then we didn't have enough resources to do the hardware components of recycling. So like, let's start with the soft component of changing mindsets around generally waste management in our community. So we started reaching out to different schools and talking to students, reaching out to different community members and stakeholders about issues surrounding waste management. Then in 2018, while I was teaching at Gulu University, I met this lady, my co-founder, Paige Balcom. She was doing her research. By then she was studying at UC Berkeley. So she was doing her research around plastic waste management in Uganda. And someone directed her to my office. They were like, yeah, this guy was doing something around this particular issue. And eventually we started working together to address this challenge. Initially, we wanted to do it as an academic project, but later on we realized that we won't have much impact in the community if it is just an academic project. So like, how about we just start a social enterprise to tackle the plastic pollution crisis in Uganda? So yeah, we reached out to people, asked people about suggestions for the name of the social enterprise, and many people suggested Takataka, which is a Kiswahili word meaning waste, trash. So we're like, okay, we can go with this. Let's start Takataka Plastics. So in 2020, we officially started operations, and our main focus was on two issues: the plastic pollution crisis, but also the youth unemployment, the high youth unemployment rates in Uganda. So we're like, can we tackle these two issues at the same time? And yet we realized that the value chain in plastic waste management is long, and we could create jobs along the value chain. And yeah, so we started the operations.
That's wonderful. And I can't wait for us to really dive into what that looks like today and kind of how things went along the way. One of the things I'm curious, though, before we talk about that is, you know, you mentioned how you went to Denmark and you saw that Copenhagen was really clean compared to what you had experienced, what your experience was in Uganda. And I'm curious, before you went to Copenhagen, did you think there was a pollution problem or a waste management problem in Uganda?
Yeah. We face a lot of challenges. I mean, if you move along streets in different parts of Uganda, like the drainages are clogged with a lot of waste, mostly plastic bottles. Then I'd also witnessed that the most common practice of managing waste. I mean, even in schools, we had been told that the best way to manage waste is by burning the waste or burning the waste. And before moving to Denmark, I didn't really know the magnitude of the impact to human health and to the environment. But when I moved to Denmark, and in my course, we have this course unit that talked about environmental sustainability, then just studying that and getting to know the magnitude of the challenge, I was like, yeah, we need to do something back home. We need to figure out a way of addressing this this crisis. And I was also motivated by the practices, I mean, the systems that the Danish government has put, simple systems that have put in place to enable citizens like take back some of their plastic waste or even separate waste at the source. So like, yeah, my bigger vision when I go back home is to do something similar to this in my country.
Yeah. And that's really interesting because sometimes we don't realize the magnitude of a problem until we go somewhere else. And, you know, I'm curious, when you started that soft change, before you could really set up that value chain, as you mentioned, for really processing the waste and creating a business, when you were thinking about sort of the soft changes, what was your experience when you would go into the schools or when you would talk to the community about this issue? How did they respond? Did it resonate with them?
Most of them did not resonate with the issues we were sharing with them. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the most common practice, like even in the schools, students are taught that the best way to handle your waste is by burning and burying the waste. Even the teachers, many teachers were ignorant about the best practices associated with handling the waste. Then with the community, one challenge that we got was, the mindset. Like they had a negative mindset around waste management. We would ask community members that, who do you think is in charge of managing the waste? Whose responsibility is it to manage the waste? And many community members thought that it was entirely the mandate of their municipal councils or local leadership to manage the waste. Many of them didn't know that it took like a collective approach, like a stewardship, like everyone could be involved in doing, in waste management, yeah. But after some times, because we did a lot of campaigns, we've seen changes. We've seen changes within the community. We've seen members of the community coming up to our facility, requesting for waste segregation bins or requesting for services, for example, for us to reach out to their communities and sensitize more members in the community. And yeah, so it has kind of changed. But it takes a lot of energy, and it also needs a little bit of patience.
So let's talk about that transition you made from the soft changes to an actual infrastructure for managing and handling waste. And then, of course, we got to talk about how you convert it into usable products. But talk a little bit about that process of how you know, what did it take for you to go from this idea and then soft changes to an actual business and processing of the waste?
Yeah, well, what we started with was to understand the state of waste management in the entire country. So we did a number of visits to different plastic waste handlers across the country. And we realized that there were some players already in place. We also realized that the biggest chunk of plastic waste are actually the water and soda bottles, and kind of the most challenging plastics to handle in developing countries like Uganda. Well, we found some players in Kampala who were crushing this kind of plastics, the soda and water bottles, into flakes. And then they would export the flakes to countries like China and India. But around that time, China had closed the doors to importation of plastic waste. So we were like, wow, exporting the flakes is like exporting most of the value in the plastics. How about we figure out a local way of transforming this waste into reusable products that we can then sell within the community? So it was like, how do we create this local circular economy? So yeah, our team started doing some research around that, and our engineering team figured out a way to pre-process the flakes, ready to be converted into new products. Then we also did research on what kind of products could we actually make from that PET. Then we realized that the construction market in Uganda is like super big. Like we could tap into that. So zeroed down to construction tiles. And we started building some of the machines locally. We're like, importing the machines would be like super, super expensive, given the fact that we are still a startup entity. So we decided to like build machines locally, use local materials that we could find. Then for those materials that we could not find in the market, we would import. The reason was that, well, we could import the machines, but the taxes and the cost of the machines, if you're to import, is like way, way higher. And still, we wanted to engage students from universities, engineering students, to participate in the process, like figure out how to build these machines. So we built some machines, and we got some, we imported some, and yeah, we started processing the plastics into the final products. Then I think like 3 months after we started, COVID hit, and it kind of affected our production. But it was like a blessing in disguise. So we realized that fashions are made from plastics. They were like, okay, since we work to transform waste and empower communities, like support the community we work in, how about we support these frontline medical workers by figuring out how to make fashions? So after several attempts, we finally came out with a good prototype for the fashions. And during that time, I mean, during the pandemic, we distributed over 20,000 fashions across Uganda. But in the meantime, we're also still doing more research on how to improve on our final products. So after COVID, we resumed our previous operations and started making even more products. And what really helped us in this was we did participate in a number of business competitions, like international business competitions. For example, the Big Ideas competition in the US. And so we secured some pretty good grants that enabled us with our operations, enabled us to do research and development. And yeah, that also introduced us to more networks of plastic professionals, more networks of people who care about social impact. And yeah, so far we've grown. I remember when we started in 2020, we were only about 5 staffs. Now we've grown to 47 full-time staffs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. I want to talk a little bit about the impact to the communities that this company has had. But I'm also first kind of curious, I know it might seem maybe a little boring to listeners, but maybe not, because a lot of people care about plastic. And I think that this whole recycling and turning it into other things is a bit mysterious, right? How do we get shoes and shirts and tiles and chairs and face shields out of plastic? You know, Is all plastic potentially a new product, or is it really a limited type of plastic that can be recycled and reconfigured into a new product?
I think almost all plastics, if they're not degraded by, for example, by sunlight and other factors, can be given a second life. They can be transformed into something that people can use. We thought that would be far much better than people burning the plastics, like creating a carbon sink where like you have this house made with the tiles that would rather have ended in the landfill, or that would rather be burned by the population. Like, how about we just create this carbon sink, like give the plastics a second life and create a carbon sink while we await a permanent solution to the plastic waste crisis, while we await for different alternatives for plastics. So yeah, we thought it wise to like, okay, a carbon sink would be a perfect solution, especially for like the developing world context. That would be a perfect solution instead of just burning the plastics and emitting all the CO2.
Oh, for sure. And aside from the CO2, I mean, releasing, you know, we know microplastics are a really big challenge for humans and other animals. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. But I'm curious, you know, without, you know, too much detail, but can you give us a sort of a sense of the life of a plastic bottle? From the time you get a hold of it to the time it becomes a tile? What does that process look like?
Yeah, well, so we've set up like what we call plastic banks in the community. Then we've also trained a number of youth in the community who are like our collection agents. So they move around into the community, pick the plastics. Some of the plastics are deposited into these plastic banks. And depending on the distance of the bank from our factory, from our facility, we'll either use a vehicle to bring the plastics to the facility, or we use carts. So we have team members move around with carts and then collect the plastics into our facility. Then when they reach our facility, we have a pile of the plastics, like a small mountain of plastic, where we deposit these. And then the next step is our team sorting the plastics according to types and also according to color. Because, I mean, we don't want to process mixed plastics, because that also contributes to degrading the plastics and it makes it harder for future recycling. So if it is PET, the solid water bottles, we separate them from the hard plastics. Then after that, our next step is to crush. We crush the plastics into flakes. Then that is followed by, we've built a machine that washes the plastics. So we thoroughly wash the plastics. Then since right now we're doing a manual sorting, sometimes there are some impurities that you find in the plastics. So after washing, we built a float sink tank that we use to separate the impurities from the PET flakes. It uses the law of flotation using density and so forth. Yeah. So after that, we then dry the plastics. And for now, we are harnessing the power of the sun. Like we don't use any machine to do the drying. So we use the sun to dry our plastics, and then they are ready for processing into new products. And so we have different machines for doing the processing. We do have an injection molding machine for making the tiles. We have a sheet press for making 1 square meter plastic sheets of different thicknesses. We can make 6 millimeter, 12 millimeter. Yeah, so we make those. And from the sheets, we make furniture. So we have a CNC router that cuts through the sheets into different shapes. And then we make furniture. But for now, our furniture, we are trying to, I mean, not many Ugandans are used to recycled products. So we try to merge the traditional materials that are used to, for example, wood or metal, then use like metallic sheets for the seats and the backrest. And that's because we realized by going that approach, then you can slowly change their minds around using recycled products. Then finally, I think, like for the tiles, after producing them, we then package them ready for selling.
Wow. That's a pretty complicated process that you have worked out. And, you know, I know there's a lot of science behind it and a ton of engineering, but there's a human component to this too. And so can you talk about the changes that you've seen? I mean, first of all, as a company, you've gone from 5 to 47 full-time employees, which is really incredible in just 3 years. You know, can you talk about the broader impacts to the community that you've seen, and how that has, you know, continues to inspire you and your company to press on in this, you know, kind of in this area?
Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll start from our staffing. Through most of the components in the value chain, we employ mostly former street-connected youth. So I have this community-based organization that I co-founded, that it's called Hashtag Gulu, that works entirely with street-connected youth. So we work with that organization to identify some youth that have kind of reformed, and we train them throughout the value chain. We train them on collection, we train them on sorting. So we even train them on running some of the machines. And we have a counseling department. So we offer trauma counseling as well to our staff. So we are not just into recycling. So we are across all the three pillars, people, planet, and profits. Yeah. So nearly half of our staff are actually at risk, former at-risk youth, mostly former street-connected youth. And employing them has kind of changed what the community perceives about at-risk youth. So right now the community knows that, oh yeah, these young women and young men can actually be impactful in our communities. So that makes other businesses across our community start trusting this category of youth. But beyond that, I think the other way that we've impacted the community indirectly, I would say reduction in cases around malaria, because this is what I normally tell community members: plastic pollution contributes to an increase in the rates of malaria within a given community. And some of them ask how, and when you tell them the narrative of how like plastic bottles clog drainages and create breeding grounds for mosquitoes, and then they start understanding that. So I think by getting rid of most of the bottles within the community, we are indirectly contributing to that effect. And yeah, I think the other benefit has been we've received a number of visitors from across the world coming to Guru to learn about what we're doing. And indirectly, that means they're bringing in revenue. I mean, they're sleeping in hotels or supporting local businesses and so forth. Yeah. Then the other impact has been mostly with our students. We work closely with the engineering department at Guru University. So like we get students and give them internship opportunities, train them not only on plastic recycling, but train them on like design thinking and general circular economy principles. And yeah.
Okay. And I, you know, I've been to Gulu and it was very clean. And that's something that I noticed. And so how much of an impact do you think Taka Taka Plastics has had in making Gulu sort of an example of what's possible?
Yeah, I think we've greatly contributed to how Gulu looks at the moment. I mean, using the different innovative measures that we put in place. For example, the plastic banks, we've distributed more than 60 plastic banks in major public spaces across Gulu. It was something that we thought about. Like, okay, let's give it a shot and we see how it works out. And it's working out. And other cities in Uganda have also started adopting some of the measures, but also using what people like, for example, comedy, like using local comedy groups to change mindsets around waste management, or even engaging the local leadership. Because I mean, most of our local leaders are not that well informed when it comes to matters related to environmental sustainability, but we always get opportunities to sit with them and share with them the best practices around environmental sustainability, share with them how public-private partnerships can be utilized to best achieve the desired goals around waste management. And also like training the university students. We've seen some of the students we've trained also start venturing into waste management, not necessarily plastic recycling. Some of them are venturing into organic waste management. And so that contribution has really helped the city, like to some extent, be far much better than other cities when it comes to waste management. And our ideal plan is to first prove the pilot in Gulu. Then after proving the pilot in Gulu, we want to replicate the same model in other cities and to increase impact.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the next step for Taka Taka Plastics? So aside from, you know, growing, are you sticking with the construction, you know, niche in terms of your products, or are you looking at how to diversify the products that you can make?
For now, we will mostly concentrate on the construction market. But however, we also make some custom products for our customers from recycled plastics, though on a small scale. Because, I mean, we realize in order to recycle the largest amount of plastics, it is through products like construction products that enables you like to do much with the plastics. Yeah, but we will still be doing some of the custom made products, and in the near future, I think in about 1 or 2 years. Right now, we are renting a space in where we are doing operations. It's about an acre, but we bought 8 acres of land a little outside the city. So the plan was to build a bigger facility, but also set up like a training hub where we get students from different universities and train them for about 3 months on different matters around waste management. Then we release them back in their communities just to have that butterfly effect, like spread the effect across Uganda and Africa at large.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such an incredible thing that you're doing. And, you know, not everybody that cares about plastic who lives here in Uganda that, you know, maybe also agrees. I've met many people where I am in windy, impenetrable forest who, you know, they don't know what to do. And so what advice could you give, you know, the average person who maybe they can't start a company, there's no waste management infrastructure. What is the thing they can do on their own to have a positive impact and start to try to create a little bit of change around this problem?
Yeah, I think they can contribute a lot to reducing on the plastics that get out there. I mean, the plastics that get in the landfills or get burned or get into the drainages. And it's as simple as one, trying as much as possible to reduce on the usage of the plastic bottles. I mean, if someone was using maybe 2 or 3 plastic bottles in a week, try and reduce to 1. I mean, there are reusable bottles out there, like just acquire a reusable bottle and try to reduce that. And the other thing that I've always told people is try as much as possible to refuse some of the plastic products. I mean, in many instances, like in Uganda, people use plastic straws to drink their sodas and drink their juice and so forth. But you can refuse. If someone serves you with a straw, you say, no, I will just take my soda direct from the glass or from the bottle. I don't need a straw. Like, we need to learn to refuse. Some people don't want to do that because it's like lifestyle. They're used to doing it and they think it's cool. But I mean, people need to learn how to refuse to do things. And also, I would say repurpose some of the plastics. I mean, there are various ways that people can use, for example, the water and soda bottles. Like, I remember in the past we were training, like, even primary school kids on how to make, like, desk organizers using plastic bottles, like, within a short period of time, or how to make, like, flower pots using the bigger, those 20-liter plastic bottles. So people should think about, like, how to give a second life to some of the plastics that they have at their premises. And yeah, but it takes, like, for such upcycling, it takes a little bit of training. So I would think what would be ideal, as I mentioned, like creating the butterfly effect, like reaching out to schools, creating eco clubs. I mean, these kids can go back to their communities and bring along the lessons they learned around upcycling in their home.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's, well, and you know, how you and I got connected is, you know, I came from the US. I'm here as a Fulbright scholar, and the first thing I noticed was how much plastic waste there was and how much waste in general there was all across Uganda. And I didn't understand it. I couldn't understand why it was like that. It took a really long time, but I became really concerned and passionate about it from a human health perspective, from a wildlife health perspective, and from an environmental perspective. But I quickly found here where I am, there's no waste management infrastructure at all. And so everything is just thrown outside. It might be burned, it might just be discarded. And here I was in windy, impenetrable forest, and it'd been penetrated by plastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah. I mean, I've also witnessed similar scenarios. Like right next to Gulu, there is this falls called Aruru Falls. And when you move down the falls, like, you find a vast amount of plastic bottles. Like, it'll be like, wow, how comes we have all this? And
yeah, and it's the same thing in Queen Elizabeth and the Kazinga Channel. And so I got really concerned and I got really passionate about how I could do something, but also understanding that you can't just ask people to recycle it when there's nowhere to put it. There's nowhere to recycle it.
Uh-huh.
And so right now, as you know, I just received a grant from the U.S. Embassy to at least begin a part of the piece and investigating for the presence of microplastics in mountain gorillas and in elephants, and working with kids in high school classes, one in Bwindi and one in Queen Elizabeth, to come up with a message about the problem, and they could do it through art. They might do it through comedy. They might do it through music. They might do it through dance, to, you know, try to communicate to their communities what is what they have found when they did this investigation. And so, you know, and that's how I got to know about Taka Taka Plastics. And I'm, you know, so glad to be connected to you and your company and everything that you're doing. And, you know, I just, I'm so excited for what the future holds for you. And I guess, you know, if you would like to, you know, leave listeners with just sort of one message about your journey and what you're hoping for the future, what would that be?
Yeah, I think I would hope for a future where everyone is eco-conscious. Everyone is mindful about the environment. Everyone is mindful about life on water, I mean on land and underwater, and everyone is responsible when it comes to consuming products, like using the right products to use, products that don't harm our environment. Yeah, that is what I would yearn for.
Thank you so much, Peter, for being on the show and, you know, for the impact you're having in so many ways for people, for the environment. You're working in on a circular economy model, but it's also circular nature. And I think that everything that you're doing is really connecting those two things. And so thank you so much for being on the show and sharing what you're doing.
Thanks. Thanks again for hosting me.
As we wrapped up this discussion in the world of plastic recycling, remember that each small action we take collectively contributes to a cleaner and greener future. Whether it's choosing sustainable alternatives, supporting eco-friendly initiatives like Taka Taka Plastics, or simply being mindful of our plastic consumption, we can all make a difference. But wait, there's more. In our next episode, we're talking about science communication, something that I'm really passionate about. One of the challenges we face when we want to talk about things like climate change and conservation of natural resources is how do we go about conveying complex scientific concepts in a way that captivates, engages, and inspires people? I mean, think about genetics. If you've given a collective groan, don't be afraid. For all you Trekkie fans out there, beam me up, Scotty, because I am really excited to bring you someone who has mastered the art of science communication and even consults for, you guessed it, Star Trek. As we say goodbye to the plastic revolution, gear up for a conversation about the art and importance of science communication. It's not just about understanding the world. It's about sharing that understanding with the world. Stay tuned for our upcoming episode. And until then, let's continue our journey toward a sustainable, informed, and empowered future. Together, we can shape a world where knowledge flows as freely as our commitment to creating positive change. Thanks for listening.